As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, this is Glad Tidings, a podcast all about Everton from The Athletic with your in-house club correspondent, Greg O'Keefe, and that's me, and Paddy Boyland. On the show this week, we leave the Amex with little credit. Injury added to insult as Gabamon is ruled out for the season. Visit of struggling Spurs with an air of importance, and one eye on the Champions League as PSG dispatch Bayern. Afternoon, Pad, before we get going, give us your thoughts on Marmalade, please.
I feel like there's a whole load of context I need to add.
No, just give us your thoughts. Yeah, maybe add some context.
A telling insight into how pre-production worked, where we discuss important things like marmalade and lemon curd and how I abhor both substances. Yeah, fantastic. The behind the veil of Glad Tidings, the outtakes edition this season, I think will be particularly strong. But no, horrible substance. Other than that conversation, really, I'm actually doing quite well. Back in my flat by the Liverpool waterfront now, finally, after about a month away because of various issues. So feeling a little bit more optimistic. The only thing I've got to complain about right now, with the weather being so nice, is the fact that Everton would die on Monday. But I'm sure we'll get into that.
We certainly will. We've got to have something to complain about, haven't we? And obviously, we do know that you'll be desperate to hear those outtakes of the pre-production marmalade chat. So we will, you know, look forward to getting that at the end of the season. We'll get that on it. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Athletic UK right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. So that's 40% off the full price of the subscription. You'll get all the great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. This week, we've already had Paddy's reaction to a frustrating night, like we said, at the Amex. A nice piece looking at the timely piece from Paddy, looking at the under-18s and the different emerging talents we've got there, half of whom seems to be on the bench at Brighton and may well be again on Friday evening. And there's a column from me on Seamus Coleman imminently and lots of other stuff that Paddy and I are working on this week. So don't forget, you go to athletic.com/Everton Pod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/Everton Pod. So, yeah, Paddy, like I say, Paddy, it was your game, wasn't it, in terms of you were the one covering it, unfortunately, for you, on Monday evening. And I don't know, I was just thinking about this earlier. It's not so much that you could blame a lack of effort, but there was a lack of everything else there, wasn't there? And at times, Brighton looked like the more likely winners.
Yeah, I'd go along with that final point, definitely. Save for maybe the Alex Iwobi chance at the end, which I'll be honest, I thought that was in.
Oh,
from,
yeah.
From the TV camera angle. Mm-hmm. Save for that, there wasn't much else in an attacking sense from Everton. Obviously set up to restrict with what appeared to be about 15 centre-backs on the pitch in a variety of different roles. We've become accustomed to that recently, haven't we? quite a limited game plan, a game plan that in the main I think probably worked from a defensive point of view, because Brighton didn't have too many chances, but didn't give us much at all in possession. I mentioned in the match piece, and I mentioned to you over WhatsApp, why was Robin Olsen playing long balls to Tom Davis, of all people? Tom's not even that tall, is he? I think,
no.
Is he 6 foot even?
I don't think so, about 5'10". Yeah.
So why was Everton's goalkeeper playing the ball to Tom Davis?
Exactly.
Beyond me. So it was frustrating, obviously missing a load of players, so you have to be realistic. I think the injury list is too long right now for certain aspirations, particularly Champions League. But there just wasn't, I don't know what you thought, but I just didn't feel there was enough in attack.
There definitely wasn't enough, I agree. There wasn't enough at times urgency, and certainly not enough edge or technical acumen really in the final third, and that's been a worry for a while now, apart from James Rodriguez. Do you think, obviously the news about Jean-Philippe Gabin that we reported on Monday, do you think the sort of that had an impact on team morale? Because, I mean, they would have been delighted to see him finally come back last Monday, and then also pleased to have him back in the squad as another senior option. And then for him to be ruled out in the way that he was, and then for Alan not to make it as well. We thought Alan might be in the running to start at Brighton. Do you think Seamus Coleman alluded to morale afterwards, or he was asked about it rather? Do you think that was part of the problem?
Well, he kind of poo-pooed that, I think, a little bit.
He did.
In his interview with Sky Sports. I don't know, really. It's obviously been tough for everybody, particularly Gabamon himself. That is a massive blow for him. A really cruel blow. I think probably the cruelest of all, which is saying something when it comes to him. So I think that is bound to have some kind of knock-on effect. And the fact that Calvert-Lewin obviously travels but doesn't play. Josh King is ruled out. By the time Yerry Mina was injured in the second half and had to go off, I think it was 11 first-team players out. I think that's not just about kind of mental tiredness and stuff like that and what the knock-on effect of that, but I think it's just about quality, isn't it? Not having enough quality in certain areas, being particularly depleted in the middle of the park. And whatever you say about the players, they did battle to a clean sheet. What we didn't get was the free-flowing football, the playing out from the back that Ancelotti wants. Ultimately, that's what training is about. We're told everything is passing drills between the lines, finding players in space, playing the ball through banks of two, three, four at times players, particularly the defenders. And on Monday night, it was Mason Holgate receiving the ball or Tom Davis receiving the ball. Everton's midfield very much down to its bare bones, so that didn't happen. It was disappointing in that sense. Disappointing, obviously, with regards to Europe. And I'd like to start seeing more, because I looked at that team, and even though it was depleted, sitting deep doesn't really seem to work to the strengths of James Rodriguez. Doesn't really seem to work to the strengths of Gylfi Sigurdsson. I thought Richarlison was completely isolated. I felt really sorry for him, actually, with the role he was given, because he was effectively having to field long balls against Lewis Dunk. He's never going to win them, let's be honest, with his back to goal. So it felt like an accentuated version of what we've seen over the last couple of months, partly because of injuries, partly because of necessity, but also I think Everton sometimes are their own worst enemies on the ball. So these are kind of recurring themes, and I think they'll continue. Mm-hmm. What we have to hope now, Ancelotti mentioned after the game that he's hoping to have four or five players back, including Jordan Pickford and Calvert-Lewin, maybe Alan, for that game against Tottenham. They need to get players back soon, because without all that quality, like I said, I think Europe is a very distant prospect.
It's not just the momentum that, obviously, in the table that's dwindled. That's clearly the most important thing. But I think it's a bit of belief, or rather, certainly among the fans. I think that, you know, there was a talk, wasn't there, in the heady days of about a month ago of the top four. And we were chatting before we started recording and looking enviously at West Ham up there and forth, where as they are now, and sort of thinking what might have been and what probably should have been, if, you know, a few twists of fate. Obviously, injuries don't help. But you know, Joshua King coming in, not having an impact. And you look at down at Olympic Stadium and Jesse Lingard going there and having the opposite. It's really frustrating. Do you think, given the situation we've got now, where you know Isaac Price is on the bench, 17-year-old midfielder, it just is bare bones completely in the middle of the park. Do you think midfield has got to be another area to address again in the summer? Or do you think some of these youngsters can step up? It's difficult, isn't it? Obviously, Tyler Nyang goes out with a fractured ankle, but maybe we'll be involved or back ready to be involved again at the start of next season, or certainly not long after it. But we just need more depth, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of the issue is players like Alan, Fabian Delph in particular, but also Gabam and Art picking up.
Fabian
Delph. I was about to read a Wikipedia page to introduce him to you, but
right, thanks.
Let's spare everybody that, because he's obviously the lesser spotted Fabian Delph, who's still out, as he has been for much of the season. A lot of those players, Andre Gomez is another one, they're susceptible to picking up injuries.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, we talk about building from the back and that being Ancelotti's preference. Well, who's really going to do that even when everybody's fit? I mean, I really like Abdoulaye Doucouré, as I know you do. I really like Alan as a player. But neither of them are those kind of deep-lying playmakers that, like, say, a Mikel Arteta was at times.
No.
And I think that's almost what you need when you're building from the back. You need somebody to drop in and knit those attacks together. You mentioned Isaac Price being on the bench. He's a 17-year-old kid. And, I mean, this is his first season even at under 23 level. He started the season as an under 18. He still plays under 18 games. He's still got the body of a kid.
Mm.
And he's being asked to replace potentially Abdoulaye Doucouré, Jean-Philippe Gabam, and these guys who are, at least in terms of how they look, primed to be Premier League specimen.
Mm.
And I think that's the issue in itself. West Ham have done so well because they've got somebody like Jesse Lingard who just, he picks up the ball and makes things happen with his direct running. And Everton don't have that out ball at the moment. I don't know about you, but I don't know who's going to carry the ball forward with pace. They've obviously in the past had Doucouré to do it. They've obviously had Richarlison, if he plays on the left, to do it. Theo Walcott even is out on loan at Southampton. But I think they're crying out for that player as well to bring the ball forward at speed and just to alleviate some pressure, because everything is, we sit deep, we defend, and then we look to hit the ball long to a Calvert-Lewin type.
Mm.
Well, what happens if that doesn't work? Because
it frequently doesn't.
That would be my question. I just think there needs to be, they look slow at the moment, don't they? Save for Ben Godfrey, maybe Mason Holgate. They look slow. Even the gifted players like James Rodriguez looks slow to me. I just feel it's quite passive, quite slow, stodgy football. And you just want an injection of pace from somewhere to shake people and get an injection of pace from somewhere.
I couldn't agree more. I think even as unbelievably gifted with the ball at his feet as James Rodriguez is, more often than not, he's getting it with players in front of him because he's not quick enough. I don't know if he ever was, but he doesn't seem quick enough now to be surging beyond the player. So he's having to get the ball and then, you know, with a few tricks and feints, go past them. But someone to burst through the lines, you're right, you're looking at centre-backs or players who have signed a centre-back, so, you know, in terms of Godfrey and Holgate.
Seamus Coleman as a wing-back.
Yeah, you know, a 32-year-old wing-back. We're really missing that. That's a really good point. Maybe, you know, you did a piece I mentioned at the top there, but, or maybe I didn't mention it actually. Probably in hindsight, I didn't, because time's sadly moved on it since. But you did a piece at the end of last week about, you know, what the real Gabamin is all about and what we might expect from him. And I really enjoyed it. Found it informing and entertaining, infotaining. Because I learned about, you know, from obviously you studied a lot of his games at Mines and for Ivory Coast. And he did seem like a player, actually, on occasion, can burst forward with the ball and break through the lines, maybe not so much in a sort of creative way, but can just by sheer pace and force of will. obviously that's not going to be an option again now for a while. So we, you're right, we badly lack that. And I think that needs to be addressed in the window. I know you've got, you're working on a piece that will be really interesting about the whole issue of Everton's lack of pace in general. Do look out for that soon on the site. But it's going to hit us for the running, I think. There's no wonder we sometimes appear easy to play against.
Yep.
When most of the time, you know, we're playing in front of the opposition's banks of four or whatever it is. And then obviously, you just as you say, we're either looking to hit it long to the wing-backs or to someone, or we're just trying to put in crosses, and we've only got a limited, you know, only sort of Sigurdsson, Rodriguez and Dean, who you'd really want to be sending crosses in most of the time.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The other thing is, I mean, there's a fantastic moment from James Rodriguez in the first half at the Amex. The pass in behind to Gylfi Sigurdsson, which I again mentioned in my piece.
Yeah.
It's wasted in the end. It results in a corner that is easily cleared. Sigurdsson plays the ball back and nothing really comes of it. That shows James at his best. And I just wonder, how many times is he able to look forward and release those runners? You're going to get the best out of James if you've got lads on the shoulder of the last man looking to get on the end of those three balls and stretch play. But they're not really doing that. They've not got wingers, really. And we discussed this on the last show. Alex Iwobi and Bernard aren't your conventional wingers. Walcott's away. There's not a lot of pace stretching the game in wide areas. So a lot on the forwards, and sometimes the forwards aren't even doing it. So it's almost like you've got James there, but you've not got all the components to make the most out of James, insofar as Everton are not dominating possession, they're not giving him the ball enough. And they're also, he's looking up at times, trying to make a forward pass, and there's nobody there for him to pass to, and he's kind of keeping hold of it and so on and so forth. He's still gifted on the ball. He'll find those runners if they make the runs. But I think it's something that needs to be addressed over the summer, because I think there is pace in the team, but most of it is pace. Concentrated, as we've said, with like Ben Godfrey and Mason Holgate, an aging now Seamus Coleman, who I thought was excellent actually at the Amex, one of Everton's best players. Godfrey, outstanding again with a last ditch block on Welbeck towards the end. Holgate filled in admirably in central midfield and is having a little bit of a resurgence for me. But these are all defensive players we're talking about, and we talk about James's quality. But I don't think we're unlocking the team and the team's capacity at this moment. And that's a worry that kind of goes beyond the injuries, because I think it's been something that's probably been the case now for a good 4, 5, maybe even 6 months.
There are always big summers for recruitment to Everton, aren't they? But I think it's another big one. And I'd be amazed if pace wasn't very high up on the list of the attributes that they want for almost every area that they need to recruit in. If maybe not the striking, if they're going to look for a striking cover for Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, but certainly in the wide player, in the right back, potentially in the middle of the park, I'd say pace has to be right up there. So obviously you've got a crucial game on Friday evening, really is, with 7 games left. Spurs not a million miles from us on the table. Coming to Goodison Park, themselves not exactly flying at the moment. Jose Mourinho is struggling to just get any momentum. Not dissimilar to the way we're struggling to get any momentum, really. We know it's going to be a difficult game. There was an absolute classic in the cup, wasn't there, at Goodison earlier in the season. I don't know about our blood pressure, if we could handle another one of them. But
but I was at that 5-4. I mean, yeah. I was lucky enough to be at it, and it was a fantastic game. Everton were on the right side of the result. And I felt very optimistic afterwards, because Everton don't usually get through those games. I was thinking to myself, they can get through this kind of scenario against a top six, a supposed big six side, then they really are on the right path. And then a couple of hours later, the draw is made for the quarterfinals, and it's Manchester City. I'd be very surprised if it's 5-4 on this occasion. But I think there are a lot of parallels between the two sides at this moment in time. They both got the kind of the experienced kind of big name manager who has some questions to answer, maybe Mourinho more questions to answer than Ancelotti. Both gone slightly more defensive in recent months, maybe longer for Mourinho. And the two sides very close to each other in the table need an injection of something to keep European hopes alive. For whoever loses that match, I think they're in trouble. As far as the rest of the season is concerned, you'd almost look at that and go, whoever loses is probably out of the running, certainly for the Champions League and probably the Europa League, in all honesty as well. So it's huge for both sides. I can never get too excited about playing Spurs, because you always think to yourself, Son's capable of doing something, and Harry Kane as well. And Dombele in midfield's a fantastic player. So they've got things that they can work with in their favour, as we have. It hasn't clicked for them, but the worry is that just for one game, it could well do. So I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be really, really tough, and you're relying on getting players back. Calvert-Lewin obviously be a big boost if he comes back. But I look at that midfield area and it's like, get some players fit. Get some players fit and keep them fit, because you can't be going into matches with... I mean, where would Tom Davis and Mason Holgate rank among Everton's first choice central midfield options? As a combination, you're probably down to what, 8th, 9th, 10th option there? How are you meant to win games with that?
Difficult, isn't it? And it just, you know, as much as Seamus Coleman amusingly said, and Ancelotti backs it up consistently, it's right not to moan on about injuries, because ultimately there's nothing you can do about them. And it just distracts. I think it provides excuses for the players that you do select. But it's difficult to ignore it as mitigation. At the same time, it is a squad game. No team is going to go the whole season with their perfect 11. You know, you had another line from your match piece from Monday that, you know, it was very stark, I thought, was how infrequently we've been able to field our best team and have key combinations of players on the park at the same time. You know, Decore, Rodriguez, Alan, and so on and so forth. It's happened not enough, but it's going to be like that. So this is where the lack of depth, I think, is really biting now.
Yeah, well, it is. It is, and they've been unlucky with injuries and in some cases, but they've also, obviously, they chose to let Walcott go on loan. They chose to let Moise Keane go on loan. So they kind of eroded Cenk Tosun in January even. They eroded that depth a little bit themselves through their own choice. Part of that was financial. I think getting half of Walcott's wages off the books, even for 6 months of the season, was something that they considered worthwhile doing, given some of the issues over FFP. Moise Keane wanted to go and play regular football somewhere and has got that, as we'll mention later, at PSG. But they've kind of weakened their own hand and thought they'd muddle through. But even a lot of the players on the periphery are injured as well. I mean, Bernard, it doesn't look like he's going to be back for the game against Tottenham or in the kind of the near future. Whether he'd be able to contribute that much anyway remains to be seen. But they're weak. And you've just got to hope, I think, that they're able to kind of pick themselves up with a few of these players who come back. And then they address certain issues in the summer, because I think we are seeing the need for reinforcements again, aren't we? You said every summer seems to be a big summer when it comes to Everton, and that's sadly, it's entirely right, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, you're right to point to this. There's so many players just not involved at the moment that it's hard to keep track. But you know, Bernard has at times fleetingly, like against Tottenham, ironically, proven his class. Not enough, I would suggest, to make him worth persevering with as more than a squad player. But you know, to not have those options, you just wonder. It's easy in hindsight, but you raise an interesting point there about the amount of players Everton allowed to go out on loan. And I'm also thinking of players such as Anthony Gordon, who was allowed to go out to Preston. It's not really working out. You just wonder whether it might have been wise to have been a little bit more economic with how many were allowed to go. And I know financial reasons, economics were part of that, as you rightly say, part of the thinking, but maybe not when it comes down to the likes of Gordon. No. Ellis Sims, you know, Ellis Sims is a different case. I think he needed the loan. Obviously, he looks like he's flourishing at Blackpool, but I don't know. Easy in hindsight, but I remember Marcel Brands at the AGM before last saying how he felt it was crucial to have a small, compact squad of 25 players, two in every position. And I wonder if that is going to be the case, then he's got a lot of work to, him and the manager got a lot of work to do to make sure that those two are equally competitive, because
not injury prone as well.
Well, yeah, and not injury prone. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that has to be a factor as well. They have to look into players previous when it comes to injuries. So yeah, a big summer and plenty of work to do.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Do you think Tottenham's woes are worse than ours? At least, I suppose, there's a unified front under Ancelotti. You know, the players are going to fight for him. The players believe in his methods. There's a happy dressing room. It maybe not always feeling the way down at Tottenham, is it?
I don't think it is at Tottenham, to be honest. I think, obviously, you hear whispers on the grapevine from there that not all is well. And you can kind of see that when you watch any Jose Mourinho interview or press conference at the moment. He's kind of digging his players out and blaming them for stuff. Ancelotti won't do that. He certainly won't do that publicly. And I do believe the Everton players hold him in high regard. They enjoy working with him and believe he's helping them to progress. So I think Everton is a happier camp, even with all the injuries, than Tottenham. Tottenham just seem to be in a bit of disarray. There's a question mark over whether Mourinho will even continue, given the extent of their underperformance. Everton's slightly different kettle of fish. You mentioned there the amount of injuries that they've had, the amount of times that they've been able to call upon probably their five or six best players. And that's all mitigation, I think, as far as Ancelotti is concerned. If things maybe don't go the way that they would have hoped this season. Now, I thought it was quite telling, actually, that Seamus Coleman in his interview said that if they don't get European football of one degree or another, that would constitute failure. Mm. And we've spoken about this before. If you state and you put out there publicly, with people like us in the media, that the aim is the Europa League, and you don't get the Europa League, then you have to be assessed against your own kind of goals and
absolutely
aims. And what we don't want is a season that kind of fizzles out. So I think Friday will give one of these clubs a boost, provided there's a winner. Let's say if Everton win this game, then they're really not out of it. They're really, really not out of it, because they'll have usurped Tottenham, and then they'll be looking at, with the game in hand, at the clubs above them. That could just give them the bit of kind of buoyancy they need, particularly with players back. But whoever loses it, I think, is kind of staring down the barrel for Europe. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm there on Friday night. Another weird, is it 8 o'clock-ish kickoff? We've kind of become accustomed to these now. I don't think anybody particularly enjoys them, but let's hope it's a good game, similar to the last one.
And you're right, the stakes are, you know, Everton just behind Tottenham by a point in the table. As Seamus said, we're 6 points off fifth, where Chelsea currently are. But we're only 4 points ahead of Villa in 11th. You know, we've got to play Villa. We're quite some distance away from Wolves in 12th, but we've got to play Villa twice. Let's try and be positive, but the worst case is we could finish as low as 11th.
Possible.
And that would be a major failure. Just unmitigated failure. So they can't allow that to happen. They've got to rise above the injury problems and find a way to beat Spurs, find a way to beat Villa, you know, Wolves, the teams that we face in the running. So it really is a crucial time. Hopefully Alan is able to play, Gomez returns, and you know, we get a bit of the cavalry back, but it's going to be an absolutely crucial game. Well, on a bit of a lighter note, certainly in terms of entertainment anyway, it couldn't have been more different from Monday, when I think you said to me at one point, and I couldn't have worded it better, what did we do in a past life to deserve watching this game? It's just horrific. But yeah, there was a fantastic game of football last night in the Champions League. PSG, Bayern, obviously the result in the end didn't matter enough. Bayern only won by one. PSG went through the semi-final of the Champions League on goal difference. What a game it was. And before you wonder why I'm prattling on about this, there clearly were topics of interest for Blues with Idrissa Gueye, frustratingly looking the player that we all admired when he was at Goodison. And of course, Moise Keane on the pitch and trying to make a difference as the game ticked on. It really was a classic game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed both legs. And I have to be honest, I've not always enjoyed lockdown football. At its worst, it's felt a little bit soulless, particularly when Everton have been playing poorly. So to watch this felt like a bit of a treat and an antidote to Monday. Monday's game at the Amex. The Everton link's obviously quite clear. More interested in how Moise Keane's getting on, given he's still an Everton player. And at the moment, will terminate his loan and come back as an Everton player next season. A lot of talk about his future, obviously, came off the bench here, but is in the main being a starter with PSG, which is obviously an achievement in its own right, given the players they've got at their disposal. He's had a great season. He just looks really, really good every time I see him playing in a variety of different roles. He came on against Bayern the other night as a kind of a left-sided forward, cutting inside and breaking forward with the ball, and was quite exciting. One very erratic shot, if we're being honest. But
probably more reminiscent of the Moise Keane we watched at Goodison a lot, wasn't it, that shot, to be honest?
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was. And obviously it didn't click for him at Goodison. It never really clicked. And I think he will want to stay either at PSG or play a similar level of football next season. He wasn't first choice at Everton even. So to make the step up, go to a side that's now in the semi-finals of the Champions League, play with Neymar and Mbappe, but also be playing regularly and getting game time, I think is quite something for him. It's kind of a win-win situation for Everton, because if he comes back, he does come back, then Everton have got a revitalised striker potentially on their hands. Still, I think, one of the best young strikers in the world. But if he does want to leave and Ancelotti allows him to leave, as he suggested could happen in that scenario, then Everton at the very least get a situation where clubs are going to be interested in Moise Keane. Potentially PSG, we think they'll go for him in the summer. And Juventus have been sniffing around, supposedly, as well. So what you've got to hope is that if he does decide that he wants to move elsewhere, that you force a bit of a bidding war, and that Everton are able to cash in on somebody who is not an integral part of the squad at the moment. If you can get a big fee for him, then that's obviously vital collateral in the upcoming transfer market. So that might be the way forward. That's certainly probably the way forward that I would suggest. I'm delighted for Idris Gueye. Have you seen the photo of him on social media after the game in the PSG dressing room, mate? Yeah.
Tremendous.
Shirt off, spinning his shirt around on the table. I'm really pleased for him, to be honest. But it is a bittersweet form of pleasure. Glad that he's probably getting what he's deserved, because he obviously wanted to leave 6 months prior to actually departing Goodison, and Everton told him to hold on and wait. I thought in that 6 months period, it was one of the best spells of his Everton career. Really important cog for Marco Silva as Everton finished that season very strongly. And I was just in awe of his professionalism, really, because I think it would have been really easy for him to buy out of the project, and he didn't. If anything, he stepped it up and showed why he's such a good player. So you're delighted to see him do well and to get that opportunity and to play as he did. I thought he was monumental in midfield for PSG. But it's bittersweet, because you look at it and go, well, imagine what he would do to the Everton midfield right now, with his energy, his work rate, his defensive acumen. I still think he's a terrific player, and he's picked up at PSG after seemingly being surplus to requirements last summer. So delighted for him, but it's almost another example of what we're missing.
We haven't replaced him for, you know, despite trying, and that's not, you know, a dig at Gabam and such a sad situation, that, but we haven't replaced him, and that's the truth. And that's the fact of the matter that Everton are trying to contend with. And seeing him playing like that only reinforces what we're missing. And to a degree, we spoke about this as well, seeing what Keane offers in terms of his pace, penetration, not always the finished product by any means in front of goal, although he has scored a lot of goals for them. Admittedly, Ligue 1 can vary in terms of the quality of opponents, but nevertheless, just shows you that that Everton still need to put some key pieces together in the summer, like we keep saying. And I think you're absolutely right that getting absolute top dollar for Keane is going to be important, because there's still the issue, albeit it's murky, how Everton are going to have to bend towards it, given it's in the process itself of being reshaped. But financial fair play still casts a shadow over most clubs with a wealthy owner who wants to try and pump prime away into the top four. They might make it easier, they might not, we just don't know. There's still the Premier League sustainability rules. Everton can't go out, even if they were in a position to, and just splash 200 million in the window. So it's going to mean it's important to get money coming in, and Moise Keane, as you rightly say, is a key cog in that. So let's hope that they can, let's hope that he has a successful end to the Champions League. Certainly let's hope that they maybe go all the way, and his value is absolutely at the pinnacle of what we can get for him. Important that we didn't have a buyback clause, so congratulations to Brands for that, in doing that deal with Juventus. I'm sure they'll be frustrated as they sort of look at, imagine if we were in Juventus' shoes, you'd be furious that they didn't somehow.
They wanted one as well, didn't they? And
yeah, they did. Yeah.
That was an initial part of the negotiation. They sold him because they needed money, and they were quite intent on the buyback, we're told, but Brands managed to find a way of doing the deal without it, getting him for what I still think was a decent price for a highly rated young forward. And you've got to be looking above that, 25, 30 million now, if he continues with this form. Provoke a bit of a bidding war potentially if he does want to leave, and take it from there. But the better he does, the better it is for Everton, obviously, particularly if he does well and then ends up in the Euros. Let's say, for example, PSG go on to win the Champions League or get into the final, and then he goes to the Euros and does well. I think that only adds to his value, and puts Everton in a particularly strong position when it comes to potentially negotiating an exit.
Absolutely. Well, fingers crossed for that. But more importantly, fingers crossed for a massive result on Friday night under the lights. We'll be there providing all the usual pre and post game interaction, and then a fantastic piece of analysis, no doubt, from Paddy, hopefully on a crucial 3 points for Everton. Thank you very much for listening. See you next week.
To your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this.
Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But Striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although Striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F.
Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
The Athletic.